Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 144, recorded Saturday, September 15th, 2018. This is the podcast giving the voice to the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: outside airports and hospitality mentality. So coming to you today from the Travel Commons studios outside of Chicago, Illinois, after a 12-day sort of bunny hop through Northern Europe, first Copenhagen, then Brussels, and finally St. Andrews, Scotland, to drop my daughter off for her fourth and final year at University of St. Andrews. Prior to that, fourth and final, it's the fourth and final one that I'm paying for. Whether she gets her degree is and it finishes is completely up to her. But prior to that, I had a couple of U.S. trips back to Charlottesville, Virginia, always a nice place to visit, and a day trip to Omaha. And while all my European flights last week were fine, including the 40-minute connection in Amsterdam, that included a trip through passport control. Let me tell you, that was little pucker worthy. Late August summer storms forced me to call audibles on both my U.S. trips. And as opposed to last month when my Cincinnati to O'Hare flight was completely jacked up by storms in Miami and everything between Cincinnati and O'Hare was clear. On these flights, on these Charlottesville and Omaha flights, they were cratered by rain that I could see outside the window, either the terminal window or the airplane window in which I was sitting. They both left me, I have to say, less than impressed by United's notification service. The Monday of my Charlottesville flight, it had been steadily raining in Chicago, heavily at times. I kept checking the status of the flight, on time. Finally, I headed to O'Hare, got through security, and then checked the status again. 3-hour delay. I mean, what? You only figured that out an hour before departure time, that there was a 3-hour delay. Looking out the window, the rain wasn't letting up. I could see where this was going. So I grabbed dinner and then settled in at the gate to do some work. Every once in a while, I'd check the flight status on the United app. 3-hour delay. And then wait for it. Here comes cancellation. I wasn't surprised at the cancellation, but the lack of push notification really was a bit shocking in this day and age when on prior United flights, I mean, I was getting notifications that the plane pushed back and I was in the plane. So, like I said, you know, I wasn't surprised. I was expecting it. And I didn't have a critical meeting the next morning in Charlottesville. So it was annoying more than anything. United had helpfully booked the same flight, the evening flight, the next night. But A, I couldn't lose a whole day at the client. And B, I felt United had lost the right to my money for this flight, given how they had treated me around notification times and cancellations. So I booked the next morning's flight on American, caught a cab back home, and slept that night in my own bed. Like I said, annoying, but I was able to get over it. The next week's trip to Omaha was on yet another rainy day. It was just a day trip, so I drove up to O'Hare and saw the dark gray line of weather coming toward me as I was heading up north on the tri-state. I had mentally sort of settled in for a delay. I figured this one was coming, though it would be more problematic because I was flying into Omaha for a workshop and then flying out to Copenhagen the next evening. And that dark gray line of storms hit O'Hare as we were boarding. So I ended up walking into the workshop about 30 minutes late in Omaha. We walked outside at noon to grab lunch from a food truck, and I could see an even darker gray line of weather. Back at the conference room, I'd once again check the United app sort of every 30 minutes or so, learning from last week's lack of notification. On time, canceled. What? Again, no notice if I hadn't been checking. And this one was a bit more problematic than last week's. I had to get home. I found earlier Southwest and American flights that weren't canceled. I gambled on the American flight, which left a little bit later. And normally in those situations, you want to leave as soon as you can. But the American flight would save me the crosstown Uber ride from Midway back up to O'Hare to collect my car. I excused myself early from the workshop and headed back to the airport. Arriving late and leaving early from a client meeting, I'm not sure that that's a great way to leave a good first impression. So following up, Steve Frick, a longtime Travel Commons listener, left a note on the website about the last episode. Steve writes, "Lots of content, as well as comments on this episode. Thoroughly enjoyed the Chicago Midway layover Southside taproom tour." I think I got to come up with a shorter name for that. Anyhow, Steve writes, "When it comes to travel and Midway, though, all I can think about is delays. In Chicago, I recently sent all the members of my tribe there sans myself. Someone had to watch the dog, or vice versa. When my wife travels, she always checks luggage. We've only been married for 8 years. Upon arrival, I grabbed her bag off the belt, and it was unusually heavy. The reason? It contained 2 six-packs of Revolution Brewery beer. God bless this woman. Travel and health, this one hit home. Somehow I've managed to keep it tight, somewhat. I hired someone about 3 years ago, and while he doesn't drink, he managed to partake in every meal that he was invited to, so much so that the rest of us had an over-under on how fast he could gain 30 pounds. Yes, we are that cruel and shallow. After 2 broken pants buttons, he managed to get control." Sorry for the long comment, but keep up the great work. Steve, thanks very much. No apologies needed. And I'll tell you what, you guys are not the only cruel and shallow ones. I may have told this story before, but I had a project in Memphis, and one of the team members had kind of a similar problem as your new hire, except his weakness was barbecue ribs. The team would go out, you know, one night a week for ribs, Corky's, Central Barbecue, Germantown Commissary, but then this guy would also do a takeout slab another night when he had to work in the hotel room. The weight gain was obvious. Our over and under was when he topped 300 on his cholesterol reading. I was 1 for 2 last month on Travel Commons Chicago meetups, actually physically meeting up with people who actually listened to this. I wasn't able to connect with Keith Love and his son when they were in town early in August, so I didn't hear back from him on how my Chicago recommendations in the last episode worked. But I did meet up with Rob Cheshire and his UK crew for a bit of a taproom crawl on Chicago's Near West Side on a Friday night at the end of the month. I even got Rob to relax his anti-AB InBev stance and spend an hour in the Goose Island taproom, complete with a round of Bourbon County Stouts. At 14%, it's a bit larger beer than you typically see in a UK pub. More telling, though, was the discussion that I had with Drew, Rob's friend, who was on his first visit to the U.S. Drew asked, "Where are the dangerous parts of the city? Where are all the shootings at?" I mean, fair question. 3 weekends prior, 66 people were shot in Chicago, 12 of whom died. "You're fine here," I told him, "but you wouldn't want to go another mile west." The next Thursday, I was sitting in a Copenhagen bar waiting out the rain. My wife and daughter were waiting out the rain clothes shopping. And to each his own. And anyhow, I got talking to a bartender, a young woman who had never been to the U.S. "Where are you from?" she asked. "Chicago." "I read somewhere that that's the most dangerous city in the world." I kind of said, "Well, I don't know. I've been to Joburg, and I think that's a little more dangerous. But I told her about my experiences, that you know, my family and I hadn't been impacted by the violence, but we don't go hang out on the south or west sides where all the gang bullets are flying. But given the press about these August shootings, I thought she had asked a fair question. I mean, both conversations got my attention. I have to be honest, I'd gotten a bit numb to all the gun violence reporting, which is not a good thing. Travel, I think, is, you know, we've always said travel is all about getting different perspectives, even if they're about your own home. In the last episode, I relayed Keith Love's question about good airport apps, one that he said actually guide you through airports and their amenities and services. Chris Christensen of the Amateur Traveler podcast dropped a line saying that he uses Gate Guru, which is run by the same team that does, wait for it, Seat Guru. Branding, gotta love it. I haven't tried it yet, but we'll download it and I'll give it a go. I did see that Narita Airport in Tokyo is taking a different angle. Their free Wi-Fi service comes complete with a chatbot named Bebot. There you go, to help travelers. The press release didn't give any chat samples, something like, Bebot, where can I find a non-Asahi beer in this terminal? Bebot's response, I'm sorry, there is none. That's my own invention, not theirs. But I don't know. I think it'd be useful to see some of these chat samples, or at least it would be entertaining. Now, back in the July episode, I mentioned how tight the United Polaris business class seats were on the 777s that I took between O'Hare and Frankfurt. Now, last Monday, at the beginning of this week, Irene and I flew a new American 787 back from London. And I got to tell you, it didn't seem any roomier. We flew back on miles, so we were in coach, but because of my status, I was able to land us in the main cabin extra section, which gives you a little bit more leg room. But walking through business class to get there, I really almost had to turn my whole body a bit sideways just to get down the aisle, because those business class seat pods just encroached on the aisle so much. I was kind of thinking about safety there. I wonder how that plays, that sort of encroachment plays into evacuation drills. But anyhow, when I got to my seat, the legroom, like I said, was fine. There was more than enough legroom, and even when the seat in front of me reclined. But the seats were definitely narrow. The couple in the window and middle seats next to me were, how can I say it, larger folks. And I could see it was a less than comfortable 8-hour flight for them. Now, going back to the last episode, I keep ping-ponging back and forth between the August and July episodes. But in the August episode, while not thrilled with American's on-time performance between O'Hare and Cincinnati, I have to say I was impressed by the customer service that I got from their Twitter crew. Indeed, the next day I added a final note to my tweet stream. By the way, while it was an operational failure last night, the Twitter customer service was not. I appreciated the delay explanation and backing me up on the next flight. That was my sort of sign off on that tweet storm. And, anymore, I typically get solid and timely service from Twitter customer service. Indeed, you know, one constant on my top 10 travel tips list is use Twitter as a concierge service. So I was surprised when a colleague of mine said one day to me, I got to get some more followers so companies pay attention to me on Twitter. He said he never gets any replies. I don't know. Does anyone else have this problem? And it's not like I have a whole lot of followers on Twitter. So I don't know that it's that. Any experiences would be handy. So now, while I get good responses from the airlines on things like Twitter, my recent experience with Marriott was very different. And I have to say, I don't know if this is systemic within Marriott itself, or this was a result of them doing some of the merger integration with Starwood and the SPG program. So I don't know if this was a one-off or this is regular, but I was trying to get kind of the receipt, the folio from a stay at the Colorado Springs Marriott. The email bill never came. And then when I went to the website, the download link didn't work. I submitted then a folio request on the website at Marriott.com. And then I also hit Marriott on Twitter. The response on Twitter was faster, though it took them a whole day to respond versus what I get from typically United or Southwest or American. I get like 10 minutes. So that day response was a little odd, but it was better than the 12 days it took them to respond to my website query, neither of which either Twitter or the website query actually resulted in me getting a copy of my bill. I only got that when I gave up on all the digital channels and called the Colorado Springs front desk. Now, I knew that this would be the fastest way, and it was. I got the email from them in about 5 minutes. But I don't know. I'm always interested in seeing how all the new channels work or maybe don't work. I don't know. Maybe Marriott needs a chatbot. And hey, if you have something to chat about, travel questions, a story comment, a travel tip, the voice of the traveler, send it along. The email address, comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com. You can send in an audio comment, a Twitter message to M. Peacock, post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page or the Instagram account at Travel Commons, or like Steve Frick, going old school, post your thoughts on the website at travelcommons.com. The first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is California outside airports. A college friend of mine posted a status on Facebook saying that he was flying home to Boston from Long Beach Airport in Southern California. His comment, new favorite airport, outside terminals and boarding. It was an immediate shot of travel nostalgia for me. My first job out of school in the mid-80s had me regularly, yes, I am that old, had me regularly traveling from Dallas to San Jose, California. My folks lived in Huntington Beach, California, down in Orange County at the time, and American had direct flights from DFW to Long Beach. So whenever I had to be up in San Jose, I'd sort of triangulate through Long Beach for the weekend, fly in on Friday afternoon, hang out on the beach for the weekend, and then catch the 7 a.m. Monday morning Alaska Air flight out of Orange County Airport to San Jose. I have to tell you that I loved that triangle of airports, Long Beach, Orange County, San Jose. And as I was writing that, I was just thinking about it. When was the last time I actually said I loved an airport? But I did. I mean, compared to LAX or San Francisco, these airports were, and I use past tense, were compact, maybe even cozy, if you can apply that adjective to an airport and keep a straight face. They were uncrowded, and all of them took advantage of the California climate to be outdoor airports. No jetways, and in Long Beach's case, even the baggage carousel was outside. I mean, I remember the first time walking to pick up my luggage at Long Beach, waiting by a palm tree for my bag to show up. And this was right after surviving two of the coldest winters in Chicago while going to business school. Long Beach instantly became my favorite airport. And then on that Monday morning when I'd arrive at San Jose, the gate agent would meet us at the bottom of the steps, of the jet steps, and then guide us over and then over to and then under a covered walkway and then kind of parade us into the terminal, almost like a Japanese tour guide holding her clipboard up. I'd walk through the terminal to the car rental lot, to the little Hertz hut that was in the middle of the parking lot. And I got to know the woman working in the hut. And in those days before Hertz Gold and President Circle, that's all I needed to get an upgrade. Later, the trips through Palm Springs Airport, then those were for pleasure rather than business. I love that airport, too, walking outdoors past the palm trees between the terminals. I mean, hard to imagine all this after 9/11 forced airports to harden their perimeters. Now, fast forward to today. Orange County and San Jose are no longer outside airports. Big renovations in the 90s kind of replaced the tin-covered walkways with modern jetways and I don't know. I think doing away with a couple of the things that made them a little special. Now, the renovation of Long Beach's terminal about 6 years ago kind of installed fire pits and outdoor dining, but no jetways. It's still an outdoor airport, as is Palm Springs. Now, not all outdoor airports are California-only things. Charlottesville Airport, where I'm flying to on Sunday, that is about, I'd say about a quarter to a half outdoors. There are four gates, and one or two of them have jetways. The rest of them are outdoor boarding and baggage claim for gate-checked bags. And there's a nice second floor outdoor terrace that I do phone calls from when it's not too hot or when it's not raining. I mean, one of the things I like about outdoor airports is there's no waiting for gates. I mean, the plane lands, it parks, they wheel up the stairs, maybe even two, front and back if you're lucky, and then off you go. No O'Hare treatment, landing and then waiting 20 minutes for your gate to open up. However, the last time I flew into Charlottesville, we landed and stopped short of our usual parking spot. The pilot keyed the mic. Our gate is full. We'll have to wait for a couple of minutes. I mean, all of us, all of the passengers, we all kind of looked at each other and said, gate? What gate? Turns out he meant some fancy new ramp thing. Instead of stairs, they pushed over some huge covered ramp complete with sort of a switchback so the descent wasn't too steep. I don't know, call me old school or just old, but in my book, you have to have a proper set of stairs to be a true outdoor airport. Palm trees are optional, but highly recommended. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is hospitality mentality. Nowadays, it seems that most hotels have got their front desk training, I don't know, pretty well down. I can't remember the last time I hit an indifferent front desk person while checking in. And given the number of different hotels I stay in, it leads me to the conclusion that this, I don't know what I'll call a hospitality mentality, is a key part of their training. Because based on every other retail experience I have, I know I wouldn't naturally run into this many nice people in a row. Not that I have a problem with this. It's nice whenever I'm dragging myself into a hotel late because of, I don't know, flight delays or whatever. And the person checking me in is pleasant, wants to take care of me, walks out from behind the desk, gives me my key, points me to the elevator. And, you know, whether it's sincere or not, they seem genuinely concerned about my well-being. I mean, even in hotels that I think otherwise are a bit, I find that my standard TripAdvisor review, it says, but the service was great, which is a huge contrast with the typical experience I get at a restaurant, which, you know, you think about it, you would kind of expect a hospitality mentality there also, but I'm always surprised when I get it. And now, last Sunday, Irene and I were overnighting in London on our way back from St. Andrews and walked into an Indian restaurant, Dishoom, D-I-S-H-O-O-M. So I think it's pronounced Dishoom. Anyhow, it's up in behind King's Cross Station. There's a queue outside the restaurant, typical for a popular place. Guy comes out with an iPad, again, typical, took our name, typical, and told us it'd be about a 30-minute wait, typical. They give us a pager, again, typical, but now it gets a little bit different. Instead of pointing us, you know, over to some scrum around the bar and leaving us to our own devices, someone escorted us down to two open seats that had just opened up, asked us if the seats were okay with us, and then right behind her was a waitress to take our order. And then right at about 30 minutes, Irene had set a timer. As we're finishing our drink, the pager goes off. And so we end up collecting our stuff. And as we're kind of collecting our stuff and getting our stuff together to head back up to the hostess stand, a guy walks over to us. Is actually the same guy who took our name in line. He took our drinks, put them on a tray, and walked us to our table chatting all along the way. Oh, where are you from? Oh, I have friends in Chicago. How long are you in London? We get to the table, but before he sits down, he asks us, is this table okay for you? I mean, I can't remember the last time a busy restaurant asked me if I was happy with the table. I mean, normally the hostess expects you to be happy that she actually seated you. The food was good, but what really impressed me about Dishoom was here was a big mass service restaurant with a strong hospitality mentality. I mean, easy to do at a small place or a Michelin-starred restaurant, though. Don't get me started about my experience at the French Laundry. But here in London, a place not necessarily known for great customer service, these guys, they had that hospitality mentality nailed. And it was a pleasure, and now here I am talking about it. Oh, and the chicken curry, they had that nailed too. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 144. I hope you all enjoyed the show. I hope you decide to stay subscribed. I hope my flight to Charlottesville on Sunday doesn't get washed out by the remnants of Hurricane Florence. Check out the show notes for music links. Find us on SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, Alexa, iTunes, Google's podcast app. I don't know, the guy down the street. Find us, subscribe to us, tell your friends about us, and thank you very much for listening and hanging through all these years. If you have a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or audio file to comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com or to M. Peacock on Twitter, the Travel Commons page on Facebook, the Travel Commons Instagram site. Slip them under my door at a hotel, post them on a website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who has taken the time to send in emails, tweets, and post comments on the website. Like I said, I'm kind of hitting refresh on the National Hurricane Center's webpage to see where Hurricane Florence, or what is now Tropical Depression Florence, to see how she is impacting Charlottesville, Virginia, to see if that flight's actually going to go off tomorrow, Sunday night. Because I'm also flying United, so I'll be hitting that flight status app, given their lack of cancellation notices. But that's my problem. Hopefully you have some better travel, and until we talk again soon, travel safe, and thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now.